Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with me. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, RyanBallenGee. Get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. And you can find all of our work at golfnewsnet.com. We've got OTT apps for your Amazon and Roku TV box thingies. And we have a lot to talk about. We got a lot that's happened in the last couple of weeks. I was in French Lick, Indiana. Had a great time there. We'll talk about that a little bit briefly. We obviously have the Open Championship to talk about. The Open, if you would like, if you like to speak in shorthand. And then I do want to talk at the end a little bit about Memphis this week and being a WGC host and what it means and the absolutely outrageous column that came from some guy in Memphis who took the absolute butthurt approach to a column, or not even a column, it was a tweet, an observant tweet from Kyle Porter, turned it into a awful column that made no sense at all and was pretty embarrassing. But let's start with recent travel. So I was in Indiana after being in Tennessee. So I was in Tennessee for the 4th of July. My family and I have gone there like 5 years in a row now. It's one of my wife's cousins, I guess, technically, but more like an uncle type relationship. And it's such a great time to be able to do it every year. We have a pig roast. Almost everyone in the family in some fashion either knows about golf or plays golf. Many of us play golf, so we get to play a couple of rounds of golf. And we got to play this place in, so it was in Crossville, Tennessee, which is like the dead middle of the state. It's on a plateau, so it's a couple, maybe 1,500 feet, I guess, above sea level. And we played this place called Cumberland Cove. The Cove, man. It was $20 to play with a cart, and I think they would have let us play forever. And it was basically a glorified backyard. I mean, the greens were fine. They were really soft and very slow, but they were actually in pretty good shape otherwise. They were growing all of the bunkers in, all of them. And so as they were trying to grow the bunkers in, because they wanted to reduce the maintenance cost, they let you take a drop out of them if you landed in them. And the fairways weren't great. I mean, again, they look like a slightly better version of my backyard with a lower cut. But we had such a good time. I mean, it was so much fun playing. Of course, they had some really good holes there, actually. And if you put some money into it, it would be pretty interesting. But the reality is, $20 golf course in Crossville, Tennessee, which has become a place where a lot of retirees have come. A lot of folks who are looking to escape state taxes in different jurisdictions. A lot of retirees with pensions for that reason come. And they have probably a handful of particularly nice golf courses. So for the true locals, like the people who grew up there, the Cove or River Run, which is another kind of family-owned, sort of dingy, sort of fun, hippie place, hipster place for $20. There are a couple of other courses in the area that are kind of like that. And then you have these really nice courses that, at least by comparison, are like Augusta National. Like the next day we played a place that's the community is called Fairfield Glade. And they have like 5 courses. And we played one of the courses, the Bray, I believe. Crag, sorry. Played the Bray before. Played Crag. And, I mean, like, honest to God, it felt like Augusta National playing the next day. But we had so much fun. So then we come back, wait a day, fly into Kentucky, get over to Indiana for French Lick. And had an awesome time again. Sweeney Cup 2 this year. So Brendan Sweeney is the guy who runs the media, player relations, and stuff like that for the resort. He lives in Orlando, comes up for it, has a great time, does a wonderful job in putting us up, kind of showing the resort off to us, kind of letting us know that it's there again. I mean, it really is so good. The dining is great. And if they're putting money into it, if they just really, and I said this to Brendan, if they just fixed up the pool, it would be the awesomest place I go every year. Just because and the pool's fine. It just needs to be a little bit cooler and hipper. But it's such a good resort, and I like that it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. I like that it is a resort town fundamentally. I mean, between French Lick and West Baden Hotel, which is so gorgeous. I mean, the work that they put in, I mean, I think it was a couple $100 million to fix that specific property up, the West Baden Hotel. It's so gorgeous. The dining's great. Get a great tour, great meal there. And then we got to play in the Symetra Tour Pro-Am. And last year we played with Elizabeth Zogel, who wound up getting her LPGA card through the money list at the end of the year. And this year we played with Leona McGuire from Ireland and Duke College women's golf fame, probably the greatest college women's golfer of all time. We played with her. She's already won twice in the season, so she's got her card locked up. There's literally nothing that can happen from here on out that can cost her that. had a good time playing with her. I mean, she's kind of a quiet soul. She's not rambunctious, kind of like Sweeney. I played with Frank Bassett from Golf Talk America, and Matt Lawrence, Mitch's twin brother, and he lives in Kentucky, hosts a radio show over there. So we had a good time doing the radio shows. Matt has an incredible career, just like Mitch. Like, if you don't know the Lawrence brothers' history, go Google it sometime. I love working with Mitch. He's such a modest guy. He will never tell you all the cool stuff that he's done, but he's done series. I mean, he's been on, L.A. Law, not necessarily the news, SNL for a season. He hosted Pool, forever. And then Matt Lawrence on the other side, he was on SNL for a season. He had series he was in. He was in Beverly Hills 90210. Never talk about that. We never once had a discussion about that because that's not who he is. Those guys are awesome. Anyway, had a great time, but they're very different interactions than Leona's probably used to. But she was wonderful. She took it all. Had a great time. I think we shot 57 and lost by one. Again, lost by one. I think last year we lost by two. But it was so much fun playing it. The Ross course there is my favorite of the three. They have three. One's kind of like a nine-hole pitch and putt type deal. Obviously, they have the Dye course, which is just crazy. It's very challenging. You've got to be engaged for all 18 holes, every single shot. You got to think about them all, or otherwise it just rises up and bites you. And if you're not willing to think your way through all 18 holes and really be locked in, it'll eventually get you. Like the round that we played one this year, played two there last year because I had to come in a little late. My dog had surgery. She had a cancerous mass removed from her shoulder. She's doing well now, but unfortunately, that kind of changed some things. So I played a match with my buddy Kevin Frisch, and for eight holes, it was a really good match. And then on the ninth hole, I was one up on the ninth tee, and I blasted a drive so far right, I knew it was unfindable, but you had to go through the process of like going through knee-high grass just to see if you could find it, because if you could, you feel the obligation to play it. Maybe you could win somehow, and I never did, and it didn't work. And at that point, both Kevin and I kind of checked out, and I think we halved three or four holes in the back just by concession. Just good, or don't care, or want to move on, and I think he wound up winning the match one up, and then I want to press one up, and then he won one other bet or something. I don't know what it was. Like, he won 10 or 20 bucks off me. I forget what it was, but we had a great time, and I love going to that resort. I'm hopeful that next year we might be able to put together something where we have an audience trip there. The one this year to Sweden's Cove is going to be great. If you haven't signed up, there's about a month until it happens, which is kind of exciting. We're starting to kind of get all the prizes together and the goodie bags finalized, and it's really exciting. So head over to golftripx.com if you want to sign up for that. But so that's where I've been. And then last week was obviously the Open Championship, and man, how cool was that? I mean, so my wife and I in 2012, before she got pregnant with our son Carrick, we went to Ireland and Northern Ireland, like right around the Super Bowl. Actually, it was the week of the Super Bowl, and all of the locals, Dublin, Belfast, wherever we went, Killarney, would look at us like, why the hell are you here in February? This isn't the time of year to be coming here. We said, well, the weather is about the same at home. And they said, well, okay, have a drink. And it was so much fun to be there. I mean, Carrick, my son, is named after the Carrick-Reed Rope Bridge, which if you watch the coverage from NBC, they did a feature on it. I don't remember which round. They did maybe round three. But they showed you walking across the Carrick-Reed Rope Bridge. And Carrick means rock, and we have family members named Rocky or Rocco, so it all kind of tied together. And I loved being there. I loved being in Northern Ireland. We went past the Carrick-Reed. We went to the Giant's Causeway, which remains one of my favorite places I've ever been. And we went to the Bushmills Distillery, had the best shepherd's pie I've ever had. And we drove by Royal Port Rush and the castle, the Dunluce Castle, right next to it, or not too far from it. And just only could just put my hand on the glass as we, you know, went by in the van for the tourist group, because we didn't plan on playing golf in February in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. So hopefully I'll get back there someday to play. But I just became enamored with Ireland and the Ulster culture. And I know that there are probably parts that you don't see that probably aren't that great. And there's political, not unrest, but discomfort at times. But The people are so nice. The culture is just sharp-witted and beautiful. It's just beautiful. And I knew it would be a really good open host when it was announced. And it worked out perfectly. I mean, they got three scoreable days, including probably the most breathtaking day you were going to see on Saturday with no wind, perfect view of the ocean. It was just breathtaking. And Shane Lowry stepped up, took over where Rory McIlroy couldn't do it for various reasons. We'll talk about that. Graham McDowell couldn't do it. Darren Clark couldn't do it for Northern Ireland. But he could for the island of Ireland. And the 63 that he shot in the third round was one of the most breathtaking rounds of golf I've probably ever seen, given the pressure on him, given that this was a course he had played competitively as a professional in 2012 in the Irish Open, given that he had played here a bunch of times as a junior or an amateur, and just the amount of pressure on that guy, someone from Ireland, to win a major at a course in Ireland, Northern Ireland, whatever, but that hadn't hosted in 68 years. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on that. Even knowing that there's a three open deal with the RNA, so they're coming back. They may come back in 2029, may come back in 2024. I mean, they don't know yet, but they're going to come back, and it's going to be a regular thing. And I think they're going to get more than the three opens out of the deal because it was just that great. It was the first totally sold-out open in the history of the open that dates back to 1860. And that's incredible. So then you get the Sunday round where the weather finally shows and they bump the tee times up 2 hours and it seems like, man, it's going to be incredibly bad. If they think they got to push it up 2 hours when the weather arrives, which will probably be during play, it's going to be horrible. And it wasn't ever really that terrible, at least it didn't look that way on TV, but it was pretty bad. I mean, everyone had their umbrellas out. People were holding them sideways so they didn't flop upside in. And the golf was very difficult. I mean, the course finally stepped up because that's what it's built for, to be difficult in the wind, to make you make a lot of decisions and hit uncomfortable shots and take a lot of leaps of faith. And these guys tried to do that and, for the most part, failed. Tony Finau shot an even par 71, and he was one of the last people, or one of the only people with the final, like, 28 golfers to shoot par. No one broke par, which was pretty incredible. And then you had, at least among that group, I mean, Francesco Molinari shot, 66, I think? 67 in the final round. That's beyond belief. But he got a little bit of a head start in terms of the weather. But then you get to Lowry and Fleetwood, and it's very evident pretty quickly after five or six holes. It's a mano-a-mano, one-on-one match play situation. No one's stepping up to get Lowry other than Fleetwood. The conditions are too difficult. But the big, I mean, you had to get through the first hole because Lowry was facing a putt for bogey that if it didn't go in, and then you had Fleetwood with a putt for birdie. I mean, if both those putts don't go, it's all of a sudden a 3-6. It's a three shot. Three shots are gone. The lead's down to, what, one or two right away. But that didn't happen. Fleetwood missed his putt. Lowry made his, and it was just a one-shot exchange. And I think after a handful of sort of tense holes, really got to the fifth hole when they kind of started to loosen up with an easy birdie opportunity, if they just played it right, and they did, then I think that kind of loosened up Lowry. And you know what, I'm fine, I just have to kind of hang on, and the only guy I've got to pay attention to for the duration is this guy right in front of me, is Tommy Fleetwood. And Fleetwood hit the ball so well. I mean, you could tell he was happy with how well he was flushing it, what he was seeing, the shapes he was hitting it. He put it in some beautiful places and just could not convert. And that was really the story of his weekend. He probably would be the champion golfer of the year if he could have done that. But he never really seemed to get in a groove with putting. Same thing with Brooks Koepka. Things just didn't fall, kind of like the U.S. Open. And you got into this position going into the, you know, halfway through the back nine where Lowry was so far ahead, it was almost like there's no way. I mean, I felt comfortable going to visit some friends for an hour. Like, this thing is over. And then three bogeys in a row, it's down to four. You think, okay, maybe. I mean, this would be the most Irish way of losing the Open, to give up that big of a lead with six holes to go. But birdies, what, 15, gets it back up to six and then never relinquishes it. His shot into 16, which I'm sure was playing like 260 yards that day with the wind, he didn't even look at the ball after, what, a quarter of a second of watching it. He knew it was good. He knew the tournament was over at that point. And then 17 and 18 were just a victory march. And the cool, I mean, just so many cool moments on 18. That's my favorite major of the year for the final hole for the champion golfer of the year, especially when they know they're going to win. I mean, if you don't know you're going to win, it's a little bit different. Maybe it's nervous. Maybe you don't acknowledge it. What's happening because you don't want to acknowledge that you could win yet. You've got business to do. But for Lowry, so far ahead, once he hit the second shot, and it was literally airborne, and he knew it wasn't going to go into the crap, he raised his arms like, I did it, it's done, and started celebrating with his caddy, and the fans started acknowledging him. I mean, all weekend they were singing, you know, the Ryder Cup, ole, 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 and they were doing a lot on Sunday, and then the ovation for the 72nd hole, just, it was beautiful. I mean, that's the encapsulation of the Irish culture and what the relations between the Republic and Northern Ireland mean, and that for that day and in golf in general, they're Irish. There is no political aggression in waving the Republic flag. They are Ireland in golf, and that was really cool for a guy like Shane Lowry to get a moment in the sun after giving up a 4-stroke lead in the final round, beginning of the final round at the 2016 U.S. Open at Oakmont. This year, he had a big lead going into the final round in Abu Dhabi, and choked it away very early, only to come back and win it with a birdie on the 72nd hole. So he knew he could give up a lead and get back there, but didn't know if he could do it in a major. And I think the thing that I'm going to take away, not only from Lowry's win, because so many people were happy for him, even his competitors were hugging him, even the guy he beat by 6 hugged him pretty hard, like a bro hug. And that usually doesn't happen. It usually doesn't work out that way. I think the thing I take away from really all of the Irish golfers, but in particular Lowry and McIlroy and McDowell to an extent, he wasn't as focused upon, but McDowell, was their candor about what this meant and the nerves that they dealt with. You know, Lowry was very plain in what he said on Saturday night, that he's going to dream of winning the Claret Jug and what that can mean for his life and for his family and for his legacy, and can he do it? And then on Sunday after he won, he said, yeah, I woke up this morning not certain if I could be a major champion, despite having an enormous lead. And that he talked to one of his coaches and kind of worked it out with him and, you know, kind of psyched himself up a little bit. And then when he went to the first tee, it kind of all hit him that the Claret Jug is there. The ovation that he got from the Irish fans was unbelievable, and I'm sure it roused him a little bit. And the first shot that he hit, I mean, barely hit the club head, and he still got it out there, but with a little snap dump hook type deal that fortunately didn't go out of bounds, didn't go that far left. But then he kind of realized, you know, over the course of the round, I can do this, I'm going to do this. And then Rory on the other end, he missed the cut, you know, shot a terrible opening round, 79, and it obviously was looking like he was going to miss the cut, and puts up this furious effort, frenetic pace on Friday afternoon to try to get inside the cut line. He's got a birdie, one of 17 or 18. 17 was practically drivable on Friday. And after coming off the birdie on 16, again, really difficult par 3, I think he's going to do this. Like he might eagle 17. He might be under par going into the weekend. He's got 62 in mind, and then doesn't hit a great drive on 17. Hits a admirable shot, given the lie, into the approach. Misreads the putt a little bit. I think everyone kind of misread that putt. And then gets to 18 and hits a perfect drive, has effectively a 9-iron in hand, 8-iron in hand, one or the other, and misses the green short and left. And that was it. And I think that in missing the cut, McIlroy learned a lot. And he talked about it in Memphis this week leading into the WGC at TPC Southwind, where he said, I spent the entire season, paraphrasing, but I spent the entire season trying to diminish the value of the majors in trying to create this approach where every tournament was the same. But I realized it wasn't. They're not the same. They have more meaning, and they need to be treated that way. So now he's going to have to go back to the approach of every other golfer that, you know, majors are special, but you have to treat them with the respect they deserve. Brooks Koepka does that in one sense, where he disrespects regular PGA Tour events in favor of the majors. Maybe it's that way for McIlroy moving forward. I don't know. But the other thing that I took away from what he said was, he didn't realize how important this was to him and how important this was to the people of Northern Ireland that supported him and cheered on him until that second round, where he said, I think he said he stopped and stopped himself from crying four different times in the round just because of what it meant to him to have that kind of support in his home country. And, of course, he's held the course record since he was 16 years old. I know it's different now, but he still technically holds the course record. And that all of that really resonated with him. And I think that is something that McIlroy has dealt with his entire career. He's a thoughtful guy. He's not an idiot. He isn't a robot. He has a lot of passion for things. He is conscientious to a fault, maybe, that he thinks about how things look and other people's feelings and all of that stuff. And there are plenty of people in the world who, especially in golf, who just do not care about that kind of thing. But he does. And I think that's hard to think. I mean, as someone who I like to think I'm conscientious and think about how things look and what people feel and how they're dealing with things and being empathetic, and it can be hard when you're trying to do that and play competitive golf. It's not easy. And the amount of pressure on his shoulders, the amount of weight amplified by anything I could have ever felt in my entire life has to be just crushing at times. And so he's tried to compensate for that by trying to make it, convince himself, trying to con himself into believing that none of that's really there, none of it really matters, instead of kind of embracing it. And that he effectively admitted that in the end, that I should have just embraced it. I should have just taken it on and let it feed me instead of pushing it away and denying myself. I think that's a powerful message, and hopefully that means good things for him, because I think he realizes because of this, there are a lot of people that pull for him, a lot of people on his side want him to do well, and I'm sure he knows that in some sense, but the people that matter to him, they are pulling for him. And I don't mean the people he knows, but the people that matter, the fans that matter, pull for him and care. And in missing the cut, I think he learned something pretty valuable. All right, let's stop for a second. We'll talk about our friends at ShotScope Golf. We've been working with them this year, working on my game. I've been writing pieces for golfnewsnet.com about what I've been learning and using ShotScope when I play golf. If you're not familiar with ShotScope Golf, it is a game performance tracking system that comes with a GPS watch you wear on your wrist and then has those sensors that you screw into the butt end of your clubs, and you pair the two together. They work in tandem with each other. The GPS watch and the sensors, you don't need an app on your phone to do this, and use the system, and then as you play golf, the GPS marks each shot, use which club, tracks that data, maps it, gives you strokes gain data, and after rounds you can figure out how well you're playing, you're trending, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, how far you hit your shots for real, all of these types of things. It's wonderful, and it's given me great insight, so much so that I changed iron sets a month ago, or actually earlier this month. I changed iron sets because I just was convinced that I wasn't properly gapping my clubs. And that was just the factor of playing a player's distance type iron that went incredibly far. I mean, they were awesome, but there was like no gap. There was a lot of overlap, and I don't want overlap in my irons very much. So I made a switch, I'm playing good golf again. I'm happy with them. Went to a set of old friends because ShotScope told me, you know what? You need to find these gaps. These are your gaps in yardage. You need to fill those quickly. And the answer was sitting in my garage, which was great. So ShotScope is under $200 to purchase. The thing I like about it most, other than the ease of use, the GPS watch being a very nice feature, that you don't have to use the GPS watch. You can turn it off so it can be tournament legal. But the other thing that I like about it is that once you buy into the platform, you don't pay an annual fee to use the platform. Compared to other game performance management tools where you pay $100 a year to use their platform in addition to buying all the hardware, which I think is absolute BS. You don't have to do it with ShotScope. It is great. Check it out for yourself, ShotScope.com. You can get it quickly, get it directly from them. They'll send it to you very quickly with shipping, and you will be a very happy camper learning more about your game, and you will get better at golf because of ShotScope. Okay, so the final topic for this show is a tweet from Kyle Porter. Kyle Porter works for CBS Sports. If you don't know him, he is excellent. Another one of those very thoughtful human beings that I really enjoy talking to when I get the chance to. And he has a snark about him, as just about everybody who works in golf media does. But he sent a tweet on Sunday, I believe, that I thought was very poignant. And the tweet was an image, an overhead image, blimp image, whatever, of Royal Port Rush, the club. And the tweet, the text around that was, it's going to be jarring for these players to go from this view, this Northern Ireland view, this course, to play a golf tournament in Memphis, Tennessee next week for the WGC, the FedEx St. Jude Invitational, the upgraded old FedEx St. Jude Classic. And I think most people got the point that going from a seaside links in Northern Ireland where the weather was 65 degrees, blustery and cold at times, but gorgeous, unique scenery to, 100 degrees in Memphis, very humid, on a TPC course that is a completely different animal and just frankly not to the same architectural standard, is jarring. It is. And a person who writes for the Memphis Commercial Appeal, he basically turned Kyle's tweet into a awful, awful, awful column. A guy named Mark Giannotto. And the column for the Commercial Appeal effectively is, well, you know, consider this jarring type stuff about the story of turning this event from the FedEx St. Jude in June before the U.S. Open without many top players in the field, and then FedEx stepping up and saying, hey, we're spending a boatload of money to have this event, or have the FedEx Cup, have our name on it. We also would like to have a tournament that's a WGC in our hometown and really celebrate golf where we belong. And the PGA Tour is like, yeah, for that amount of money, you do whatever you want. And they upgraded the tournament. They took away the WGC Bridgestone, which Firestone was willing to host, but Bridgestone wasn't willing to continue paying that money. So they downgraded, and they're hosting the same course, but on the Champions Tour as a Senior Players Championship for 4 years. And now you've got TPC Southwind, which is a course that a lot of these touring pros like because it is pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of games. It's pretty... The challenge is right in front of you. I mean, there's really... And I don't mean that necessarily in a good way or a bad way, but it's right in front of you. And this whole column just trying to kind of tweak Kyle because he dared to say something that was accurate and that was insightful. And it wasn't meant in any way whatsoever, I believe, and I'm pretty sure Kyle's talked about this in subsequent tweets, wasn't meant in any way as a slight on the city of Memphis. I personally love Memphis. I've had family members who live there. They moved last year to the Nashville area, but I love Memphis. I went to a wedding there. I sang karaoke very drunk there. I've had Gus's Chicken there. I've had Rendezvous there. I've played golf there at the place that Justin Timberlake owns. I don't know if he still owns it or not. I don't remember where his name is, but it was fun. Very fun golf course. And, you know, it had nothing to do with that. It had nothing to do with the quality of the city or the people or anything. It's just, it's a big difference going from a mind-blowing, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to play Royal Port Rush to going to play TPC Southwind, which, I'm going to be honest, is not one of those things. And so, to turn that into a column and just to try to riff against this guy, because this guy, Mark Giannotto, had to be lazy as crap to do this. I mean, he was like, I need to write a column about golf. I don't know about golf. Don't care about golf. So I'm just going to rip into this guy from CBS, who, by the way, I mean, there was a really interesting implication from Giannotto that Kyle Porter shouldn't have said what he said on Twitter because he works for CBS Sports, which broadcasts the event, which is absolutely stupid, too. And I just wish, this is not the first time it's happened, it's not the last time it's going to happen, where a local columnist takes a lazy approach and builds a column literally based off of one tweet. Happened a number of years ago, I don't remember exactly when, but Stephanie Way, if you recall her, she sent a tweet about Akron being like the armpit of America or something, and a local columnist took that into its own little column and tried to take Stephanie to task, and then another columnist went after Alan Shipnick because he wasn't happy about how Shipnick felt about Firestone Country Club and all that stuff. And it's just lazy, lack of insight. And I think someone put this pretty well on Twitter. And I do not remember who it is, so I apologize. But we need golf media more than ever loving golf because golf doesn't have a good representation in general sports media. It's other sports all the time. You know, they cover the four majors. I mean, the radio hits that I do are based around the majors and maybe the players, and I would say the Ryder Cup and or President's Cup. And that's about it. Everything else is completely irrelevant. And you've got someone who's working in Memphis who should be covering this event in an earnest way, wasting time and earning money to write a lazy rundown column on a high-quality golf journalist in Kyle Porter. He writes very thoughtful, very intelligent things that really make you feel stuff. And I think he's better at that than anyone right now. And for someone who doesn't know the guy, who just took a tweet out of, intentionally obfuscated the context of it, I just find that abhorrent. And so I just had to say something about it. If you read Kyle's work, if you follow him on Twitter, give him a shout out of support. He's a good dude. He doesn't need your crap. He needs your support because he's doing some awesome work, and he really works hard in tracking this game. And I think he has as good of a feel of it as anybody who watches it for a living, who tries to analyze it for a living. And so just had to say something, you know, just felt the need. Anyhow, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. We will have the results in the WGC in Memphis for next week. We will have two majors in Europe this week. So we've got the Evian Championship, which was moved from September to the end of July because the weather was horrible in September and the course looked bad, and they reduced it to a 54-hole event twice. And then we've got the Senior Open at Royal Lithium in St. Anne. So we've got some interesting things to talk about. We can talk about the CUDA, the Barracuda out in Reno, one of my favorite events to watch every year. You should be watching it. It's super fun. It is the one and only modified Stableford scoring system event of the year, which I wish there were more types of that kind of thing going around, but nonetheless. And then we got other things that I'm sure are going to come up somewhere along the way. So if you like the show, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We appreciate it. It helps us reach more people. And if you have a question or comment about the show, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Find me on Twitter, @RyanBalaji. Available all through those channels. Happy to talk to you anytime. And if you have questions about our trip to Sweetens Cove, again, $350 for 2 days of unlimited golf. We've got prizing. We've got other good time, including food and beverage on the course during the day. Shoot me a note. Let me know. I'm happy to hook you up, get you signed up, and you're going to have a great time with us. So until next time, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.